Hello and welcome to a Monday night edition of Relatively Football, a brother, a sister, and lots of women's football, arguably too much women's football, or maybe my sister Flo Lloyd Hughes. Is there such a thing as too much women's football?
No, never, but there's certainly a lot.
We've bitten off probably just as much as we can chew, or potentially too much, I'm ushering towards. But it's an absolute joy having so much amazing football to cover and so many amazing players. And it's kind of a sign of the times. Before we get into all that, Flo, how you doing? Happy Monday night. Sorry, we're a little bit late, listener.
Happy Monday to you. Yeah, we had to do away with the Sunday on the Whistle Pod. I was in South London, in the depths of South London, covering Dulwich, QPR, and then I went to the pubs. So, you know, social life kicking through. And yeah, didn't have enough time to catch up on the games. But now I have caught up on all the games. So I'm rocking and rolling and I'm ready to go.
I'm going to take you behind the curtain here, listener. Flo is wearing the fabulous WNBA official hoodie. Yeah. As we record this over Zoom between continents. But I know from a cheeky photo from the Dulwich Hamlet QPR game that you were wearing that hoodie yesterday.
Don't air me out for wearing the same things back to back. That, none of that. We don't need any of that. But yes, I did wear this also yesterday, representing women's sport wherever I go.
Just facts, no judgment, just the facts.
Representing women's sport and not washing my clothes wherever I go.
People wash their clothes too much, so I'm with you on this one. Okay. Flo, we're going to kind of go backwards chronological order here. So the biggest news of the week maybe dropped this morning. An absolute legend of the game has decided to hang up their boots, with good reason, with so much incredible football behind them, with so much incredible work off the pitch behind them, with minds changed around the world in the game forever. Pharrell Williams has decided to retire, if you missed the news. Flo, what does this mean to you and what does this mean to the game?
Yeah, it's pretty emotional, actually. Someone who has kind of represented or been there throughout the whole growth of women's football over the last 10 years. I mean, she's had a sort of 20-year playing career, has seen women's football change so much in front of her, has been involved in so many major tournaments, and is also really outspoken and like a great, I think, representative of the game, because she's always been really honest in what she says and what she believes in and what she stands for. Has an amazing personal story, which, you know, I think most listeners will know that. And that's, you know, a massive part of who she is. And I think, you know, people do focus on that a lot. But I do think, that aside, her talents on the pitch are pretty ridiculous. I mean, the goals that she scored, you can watch her sort of like top five WSL goals on FA Player. They did a little sit down interview, and one of the ones she scored for Liverpool in their run to their first title, I think it was, where she just has a pop from the halfway line straight after, I think it was Birmingham equalised, and they were still celebrating and kind of like messing about. And Pharrell Williams just has a go straight from kickoff and scores it. And I think that just kind of sums her up, like really ambitious, really gifted, but also worked hard. And it was sad listening to her today, because we managed to get her on Women's Football Weekly really last minute, which was really nice of her to come on. And she did say that part of the reason behind the decision was the illness, and she didn't want to let it defeat her. But at the end of the day, unfortunately, it's been hard for her to play through it. So I think that's a shame, because perhaps there were a few more years in her still to come of great play.
Yeah, I mean, I think it, looking back in a few years on the 2020-2021 season, I think it's going to be even more impressive to see her push through and create great highlights. I still think about her Panenka penalty. It was either the second or third game of the season, and the technique and execution on that was as good as any you'll ever see. And I think a lot about Pharrell Williams, not just because of those stories you talk about and her work off the pitch in doing management for kind of grassroots football and community building and advocacy. But as a more casual watcher of women's football, especially around the 2012 Olympics and 2015 World Cup, someone like Pharrell Williams was someone who grabbed your attention and whose brilliance shone even for those who ignorantly weren't paying attention. And I really think of myself in this, and maybe, you know, I shouldn't center myself, But I do see Ferrer as someone who kind of made me sit up and watch and go, you know, the women's game is so incredible and thriving and deserves so much more attention than it's getting. And I think about all the Ferrer Williams highlights I missed, and I think about all the ones I can think of off the top of my head. And yeah, I think she's always going to be a player for me who reminds me of my transition into spending more attention with women's football, as well as I think for many other people off the pitch and on the pitch. She is a beacon of kind of leading the game from the front, and I just feel so thankful for Farah and what she's done in that respect.
Yeah, and I do think as well, I think she has bridged quite a big gap between men's and women's football because of her ability, because of her how technical she is, and also because I think of how much of a character she is. I mean, she really draws people in, and I think that's why it's really exciting to see what she's going to go on to do, because not only I think she's got a really great media career ahead of her, is she's spoken about her coaching ambitions, she's on a great pathway to achieve a lot. And I just think, you know, we could be looking at Casey Stoney, Lionesses manager, with Farrah Williams as her assistant. She said today on the show that she thinks she's ready to be a coach in the WSL, not a manager. She said it's far too early for her to go into management, but she really does believe that she's ready to be a coach. And I was just kind of like, oh God, like, you know, imagine that. And she's already working with the under-17s, and she certainly really wants to push on. So it'd be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, it's slightly kind of going off topic, and we've got so much football to talk about. I don't want to take too much more time, but I think about when we were growing up, Flo, like, it felt like Rachel Yankee was such a big deal. You know what I mean? Like, I remember us being kids, and Yankee was a reason, you know, and Hope Powell, I guess. The Lionesses were on the telly, and we were focused, and we were drawn in. And then I feel like Farah is, for me, like, the next icon. And there's probably people in between, but the next one to really kind of continue that, keep drawing people in and putting like the Lionesses and the WSL on the map. Who do you think the next person in that sequence is? And you by all means disagree with the sequence. And then kind of the next person after that. Like, where are we on in regards to like icons of English women's football?
I think Fran Kirby's sort of on the way. I think she, like Farah, has an amazing story and is an extremely endearing person on and off the pitch. So I think she's got a lot of love from across football. So I do think if she can continue on this path that she's had this season and carry this on into the next few years and into the later stage of her career, I think she's on that. And also I think so much of it is going to depend on how well England do. Obviously, Farah was part of 2015 bronze medal squad, which was a really, you know, iconic moment for women's football in this country. And I think she was also part of the Team GB team as well, so another really important moment. So those two moments, which I think signified a bit of a wave, a bit of a change, she was part of that. And I do think the next step is like anyone who's part of that major trophy final kind of hurdle. I think Lucy Bronze as well has already been on that journey, winning a lot of international plaudits, and how, you know, she's, I think, really become a global face for English women's football because people really associate England with her. So I think there's some good names in the pipeline, but in terms of that super technical gifted player who can, you know, smash it in from 35 yards but also, you know, so deadly from a dead ball, I mean, there's not many of those people around.
Fair play. Well, look, thank you, Farah. I know you're not listening, but
you never know.
We thank you.
You never know.
We thank you so much for everything you gave to the game and all the great memories. And yeah, if you're a young player, go and watch Farah Williams. I still think such an amazing technical player, so ingenious. Like Flo said, with that Liverpool goal, kind of one step ahead, beautiful, beautiful technique. And yeah, classy, classy player on and off the pitch. So thank you, Farah. And Flo, we'll get to the football then. Should we start with the Champions League? Do you want to go there before we go?
Yeah,
any,
let's do it.
Leagues? So it was a big one in the Champions League, a weekend semi-final special. And we had a very early game my time. I was up, I think it was about 8 a.m., 7:30 a.m. kickoff or something, between PSG Barcelona. Fantastic game, end-to-end stuff. Both teams look really good. Amazing show by Paris Saint-Germain fans outside Flow. I don't know if you saw that. The bus being welcomed in with flares and songs and banners. And it all kind of, yeah, got off to this amazing fiery start with Jenny Hermoso giving Barcelona the lead after 30 minutes. But then the US women's national team former Stanford player Alana Cook got a header just 5 or so minutes after to make it 1-1 in Paris. So a big away goal there for Barcelona. And it finished 1-1 despite a whole host of chances. Marie-Antoinette Cototo hitting the post again with a fantastic run and finish that didn't quite creep in. And Christine Enlow with some heroics as well to make sure Paris left their home with the draw. But like I said, big away goal there for Barcelona, who kind of are inching towards being the favourites for the Champions League this year. And then right after that, we had an amazing match in Munich between Chelsea and Bayern Munich, which finished 2-1 to Bayern. Sidney Lohmann, kind of similar to the Paris Saint-Germain-Barcelona game, Sidney Lohmann got off to a really fast start for Bayern after AKB couldn't quite handle a cross, and then it was bundled in off Millie Bright into the goal. And then Melanie Leupolz, just 5 minutes later, scored this wacky goal, kind of wish it was deflected into her, headed, looped over. Bayern player really tried to get it there. And this was kind of a theme of this game. It was a little bit scrappy. Formation-wise, it got really, really spread out, with Chelsea having a lot of the ball and Bayern being able to expose the space from Chelsea attacks. And then, in the second half, Hannah Glass probably scored the goal of the weekend with a just sensational finish on her left foot, creeping in on the left post. AKB could do nothing about it in the Chelsea goal to make it 2-1. Chelsea getting a vital away goal, but not getting the win. Flo, quick thoughts on both these matches and how you feel about where the Champions League is at after the semi-finals.
That PSG-Barcelona game was crazy, especially the first half. It was end-to-end frantic stuff. I think PSG will be a little bit disappointed that they didn't make the most of those chances they had. They had so many good chances, and be really interested to see what happens in that second leg. Obviously, Barca getting that away goal. I think they'll be feeling pretty confident, but I was also impressed, to be honest, at how well PSG held out. I mean, Barca did have a lot of chances themselves. Some of them were kind of PSG's own doing. But the first half was just like a battle of set pieces. It was just like corner after corner, really dangerous free kicks, really dangerous throw-ins. So it was a really exciting game to watch. But I would say, yeah, Barcelona probably do have the advantage just because of that away goal. And we know how deadly they can be going forward, and I think they'll be feeling pretty confident. And I just do think those teams just look so good, and that should be the final in some ways, those two sides. And I know, having talked to Jesse Parker Humphreys about, you know, what if Chelsea do get through, I think the feeling is a little bit nervous anyway because of what awaits them if they do get through their semi-final second leg against Bayern. These two teams that are waiting on the other side are pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think we've been saying this quite a bit this year. Every time I've watched Bayern, I think they've rope-a-doped and lulled the opposition into a false sense of security and then struck right when you don't think they're going to. And I think you saw that in this game where Chelsea had so much of the ball, like you said, couldn't work around Bayern's defensive setup. And then when the space was there, Bayern were so quickly able to counterattack, and they kind of thrived on it. And you felt like they were waiting for the fullbacks, Carter and Anderson, to get sucked in and then expose them. And you saw that with the Hannah Glass goal, albeit such an incredible finish. There's nothing really you can do about that. Like you said, it's not like if Magda Eriksson was there, maybe she would have got closer and closer on Glass. Maybe she would have got an attacker. But part of me feels like that second goal is just perfect tactics and perfect execution from Bayern. And I think you're kind of seeing how Chelsea, which to be fair, I think Emma Hayes is very good at this, at finding ways to think outside the box, finding ways to adapt, finding different formations. You know, she has a lot of options here. But Chelsea are going to need to get a little bit smarter at playing a team that is happy not having the ball in Bayern and having players like Magul and Bernstein who can do so much so quickly. And it was just a fantastic game of football. Obviously go and watch every women's football match, but I really think Bayern Chelsea second leg at King's Meadow is going to be a classic. And the way these two teams kind of tactically dueled it out, and Chelsea for once seemed really kind of all over the place, but in a really fun way. You know, Sam Kerr was tracking back to make defensive challenges, Leupolz was everywhere. It was kind of an amazing game of chess pieces and movement and space being exposed and space being brought on. And like you said, a lot of Chelsea passes to nothing with these kind of pot shots being at the end of it. And it was a really, really fantastic game of football. And like I said, I think it's perfectly set up for the second leg to see what we can Emma Hayes is going to do with her players and maybe try and throw something else at Munich, because the first leg didn't quite work. Anything else on the Champions League, Flo?
Oh, actually, you know what? I'll mention the PSG Ultras. Yeah. I don't know if anyone remembers 2019, I think it was, when their bus, the Ultras bus, was intercepted by the Met police, and they had weapons and a lot of Class A substances on the bus with them. And needless to say, they were not allowed into King's Meadow, and it was all a bit of a drama. But yeah, they are notorious, loud, rowdy, and they certainly brought that to their team yesterday.
Okay. Moving on to things back home in Blighty and the WSL. I'm just going to do a whip around the results, Flo, and then you can jump in on anything that you found particularly interesting from a sleepy end of the season week. We'll get to the game that you were at maybe first, but I'll give you all the results first. So we had Chelsea 2, Man City 2 on the Wednesday. Probably one of the games of the season. Really, really interesting game. Probably for me, defined by the Anne Katzenberger save at the end of the game that arguably secures the title for Chelsea. Just what a WSL moment. What a moment for the league. What a moment for the year. And a save that every time you see it, you cannot believe it happened. And then moving to the weekend, we had Aston Villa Bristol, the early kickoff on Saturday, where Villa went in 2-0 at halftime. And I was sitting there thinking, what have I said to Marcus Bignot? Who is this man? What is going on? Villa are finally clicking. Why were we so concerned? And then the game finishes 2-2 with a 95th minute equaliser from Ella Mastrantonio. Absolute scenes. The maternity Matt Beard bounces back, and it's as you were at the bottom. So yeah, finishing 2-2 there. And then in the early kickoff on Sunday, Manchester United finally found their shooting boots, beating Tottenham Hotspur 4-1 at home. Christian Press masterclass and a stunning free kick from Alana Kennedy, who otherwise did struggle playing centre-back for Tottenham Hotspur. Arsenal took care of business against a very stubborn Brighton side, winning 2-0. Birmingham City drew 1-1 with Reading. And then the final game on the late kickoff on Sunday was West Ham 0, Everton 0. And I watched the whole 90 minutes of that one, and I actually thought West Ham were pretty bloody good. And Emily Van Egmond and Martha Thomas gave Everton a lot to deal with. And, you know, if they get their angles a little bit right on a header, I could have really seen West Ham taking all 3 points. Flo, what jumps out to you? And then we'll get to your evening in Manchester.
That Villa Bristol City result, jeez.
Rally battle.
Even though it's a great point in terms of vibes and spirit for Bristol City, in reality, they really needed to win that game. And Brighton is probably their best shot now. Beating Brighton on the last day is definitely their best shot at survival. Chances of beating Man United, fairly slim in the context of where the two teams are right now, unless Casey Stoney wants to do Tony Oxtoby and Matt Beard a bit of a favour. But I do think that's going to be tough for them, just given how many goals they concede as well. So it's all on that Brighton game now. So fantastic that they got the point. You know, they don't give up. They believe in themselves, and that is so impressive in itself. But they really had to win that game, and Villa will probably be feeling pretty crushed about the fact they didn't get all 3 points, but they've got more time. They've got more time, and they've got a better fixture list as well. So, yeah, really frustrating for Matt Beard and Bristol City, because I was really happy about the point, but I was also like, oh, they should never put themselves in that position. But it's good to see Villa kind of, you know, taking on a game for once. And they had actually had more opportunities to put the game beyond Bristol City, and they wasted them. And, you know, Bristol City sniffed that out, which was why they just won't give up.
Felt like the first time we've seen, and I don't know if this is to do with tactics or going to Japan or overall opposition being too good. You know, Villa have kind of set up to just damage limitation until this Bristol game. In between our last podcast listener, we actually also had a 0-0 with West Ham, between West Ham and Villa, and I was really surprised slash disappointed once again with Marcus Bignot that he put his Villa team out against West Ham and just settled for the point, albeit jokes on me because that point now looks quite valuable for Aston Villa. So maybe Marcus Bignot is being validated with all his kind of no-nonsense, negative, I don't really want to play football, let's just wait for Bristol City at home kind of tactics. But yeah, I think this was a better game for Iwabuchi, didn't you think, Flo? I mean, she really showed how masterful she can be when she has a bit more time, when she has a bit more verve and kind of the handcuffs are off.
Yeah, there was the chance that Villa had in the second half. That shot, oh, I can't remember who it was, but that shot that kind of like swerved and moved and changed direction and then ended up just going past the post. But there, in the build-up to that, Iwabuchi had this like incredible touch to play it into her teammate, who then had a shot. Sorry to whoever had the shot. But yeah, certainly you just see those flashes of world-class quality when she's on the pitch and she takes Villa to another level. But they really need something to try and just believe. I think they need exactly what Bristol City have, that belief, because they just don't believe in themselves, really. And I think that a win would have potentially changed that.
Kristen Press was moved back out to left midfield, Flo, and really thrived there playing for Manchester United. Ella Toon got two more goals, taking her far and away as the all-time top goal scorer in Manchester United history. What's taken Casey Stoney so long to put Kristen Press in arguably her best position as a sort of inside forward where she can find a little bit of space and do a little bit more damage? She didn't score necessarily a classic Kristen Press goal, cutting in and then scooping it into the corner from range, but we really saw a much better Manchester United side with Kirsty Hansen and Jess Sigsworth down the middle.
Yeah, I just think with Casey Stoney, she has... well, when everyone is fit, she's got a very good squad to work with, and the left-hand side especially is fairly strong when Leah Galton is fit. Alicia Russo, ideally, I think you would play on the right when she's fit as well. So I think it's been hard for her to kind of fit all these pieces of the puzzle in, and there was a priority with playing Press down the middle. She persisted with it. It never quite worked. Also, Lauren James, who we know switches wings as well. So I think she really wanted to make the down the middle thing happen. But it's almost like because of the injuries, obviously Tobin Heath's gone back to America as well, she's almost been forced to play Press more out wide, and it's paid off. So hopefully it stays that way.
Two Jordan Nobbs goals got Arsenal a win against Brighton. I thought Brighton played really well in this game. Obviously, the scoreline doesn't necessarily reflect that, but I watched this one as well, and I always got love for Brighton, and they were actually really worked hard, albeit they didn't really play with a centre forward. You had Ellie Brazil doing a lot of the running up front, and you know they were always going to put so many players behind the ball, but they nearly got over the line. Flo, the win is huge for Arsenal, keeps them in third place, level on points with Manchester United, but with better goal difference and a game in hand. Do you think Arsenal have done enough to sew up the third Champions League place this season? They have West Ham and Everton left on their fixture list, and Aston Villa at their game in hand.
Yeah, 100%. They're going to get it.
You don't think they would maybe slip up against Everton away?
I don't think so. It's just the goal difference as well.
Fair enough. Monty, Muro making it back to Europe. All right, Flo, give us a little rundown of what it was like being at Manchester City 2, Chelsea 2 before we finish up in the WSL.
Yeah, great game. Really frantic at times. And I think Man City will be really disappointed that they didn't win it, especially in the second half, because Chelsea really sat off them and gave them loads of time, loads of space. But City were really hesitant in that second half before they managed to eventually get the equaliser. They just weren't taking the initiative or taking the game on it when they could have the opportunity to. Like, they would always slow the game down at times. They had so much of the ball in the second half, and when you thought that the pass was on, they would cut back again. And kind of what we talked about a little bit with Chelsea at the weekend, I felt like City really had a good 15, 20 minutes or so where, you know, you felt like they needed to be a bit better with the ball that they're a bit better with their possession that they were getting, because they just weren't really doing anything with it. And then they did switch it on, and Hemp does get that goal, albeit it came from a Chelsea mistake. And you thought, okay, game on now. They could go win this. And Berger does that ridiculous save. Lucy Bronze also had that chance that was a pretty good save from Berger. So there were really good opportunities, and Chelsea were on the ropes a little bit. But at the same time, I do think Chelsea just have that punishing factor that they were so potent when they got their opportunities and they took them very well. And I don't think City can be too disappointed. I think the penalty was definitely a penalty. So yeah, Chelsea was smart. And maybe, you know, I think Gareth Taylor said afterwards that he felt like his team just ran out of time. And perhaps if there were another 10 minutes or so, they eventually would have got a winner because they were pushing hard. But I just do think they wasted a good 15, 20 minutes in that second half where they didn't need to play, like, pass it around so much. They needed to be more direct. They needed to, yeah, they needed to play with what they have and Chloe and Hemp and just too much pissing about.
I actually think some of that, what you're kind of touching on, is credit to Emma Hayes, because I actually thought, I was watching the game and I felt, you know, obviously it's very different not watching on the telly, but I felt like Hayes set up Chelsea a little bit more cautiously to absorb City's pressure and let City have the ball and sort of make sure if City were going to possess it, it wouldn't be in dangerous areas. And you saw Lucy Bronze taking up more of her central mid role than her overlapping role with Kelly. And I think that was more because they wanted to dominate the flow of the game. And I think Chelsea saw that and were quite happy. And you see how, you know, the goal came from a good counter-attack in Chelsea. Sorry, the penalty win came from a good counter-attack with Chelsea. And they were able to do a lot with just Pernille Harder and Sam Kerr. And I think that's what surprised City. I think they were expecting a more attacking Chelsea team, or a Chelsea team that wanted more of the ball or were going to push forward. And I actually think they played quite cautiously. And I think Emma Hayes deserves a little bit of credit because I think they did play cautiously and they got the draw. And you saw from that kind of amazing post-match interview that they were very relieved. And, you know, sometimes that pays off. I think, you know, if Chelsea lose that game, Emma Hayes might be really criticised for playing that cautiously. But in the moment, I kind of felt like she did enough and try and secure the title and get enough fit players for Bayern Munich. And she's balancing all those things. And it wasn't a classic Chelsea display. And it'll be interesting to see if maybe we see that approach at King's Meadow, where in the Munich second leg of the Munich tie, she comes out more cautious and tries to give the ball to Munich to see if they make an error that they can pounce on. And then once they get that 1-0, maybe we see Chelsea shut up shop rather than try and take them down the throat. Quick FA Women's Championship roundup. Charlton got a great win over Durham 2-1. Surprising there, but very much the flip-flops are coming on all over the league. London Bees got a great win over Blackburn, more bottom beating higher up the table. Liverpool continued their incredible run, beating Sheffield United 1-0, which was quite a surprising result, especially with how great Sheffield United have been. Quite fancy Sheffield United to cause an upset in the FA Cup. But yeah, Liverpool unstoppable at the moment. Coventry United continuing the pattern of bottom teams doing well, beat Palace 5-2. And then Lewis did the same thing over champions and promotees Leicester City, invoking a lot of conversation about a quote-unquote conquer rule, where would Lewis take the title having beaten Leicester over 90 minutes? You be the judge, listener. Yeah, really wacky weekend in the FA Women's Championship. Sadly, I didn't get to watch a lot of it because there was so much of the football going on between the WSL and having the Champions League games at the same time. So very distracted in this one. Flo, any other business before we get out of here?
Any NWSL games you want to quickly wrap up, or you don't think they're worth chatting about?
You know what's so funny about that is I never really do shady tweets, but I sent out a tweet being like, Orlando Pride have not won a game this decade. And yeah, listener, that's what happens when you send out shady tweets. Orlando ended a drought of about 630 days or something, 650 days without a win, and they bloody won.
I am happy for them as well, because
yeah,
it was
no,
a bit
I have nothing
sad
against
seeing
Orlando.
So many good players just not get any joy. So it's nice to see, and hopefully this is going to be the start of something beautiful.
Well, yeah, and one for the mums. Alex Morgan, beautiful assist, playing
yeah,
the three
that
ball.
Was a
Sydney
brilliant,
Lurie.
That was a brilliant smashed goal. And Sydney Lurie is one of my faves, so I'm always happy to see her getting goals and following it up with some brilliant sponsored content on Instagram.
Yeah, I suppose the other narratives to check out are OL Reign doing really cool things with their sponsor. I don't know if we mentioned that on the Challenge Cup, having the Black Future Co-op on the front for the next couple of games. Really cool to see, inspiring change. They lost the Cascadia Derby last week, though, to the Portland Thorns, which we kind of tipped. And the Gotham North Carolina game was incredible. So I'm glad we tried to tell people to stay up for that one. The other narratives would be, yeah, the Thorns are doing really well. They're going to be in the Challenge Cup final. They've already qualified in the West. And in the East, it's a little bit more up for grabs. Gotham are currently top of the table with 2 wins from 2. But if Pride win their last game, or North Carolina win their two games, and Gotham drop some points, it's kind of unclear who the Challenge Cup finalist from the East will be. But yeah, I suppose the big news is the Houston Dash will not be retaining the Challenge Cup. So in its second edition, we're going to have a new Challenge Cup winner. Any pick from you, Flo, on who could be taking home the title in the end of the sale?
It's tricky because there's so many teams who loving scoring a lot of goals, but also conceding a lot. Like Gotham scored loads the other night. Thorns have scored a fair amount. Courage and Spirit have both scored quite a few, but also conceded loads. So I think the goal difference situation is going to be a bit mad. But I'm going to go Gotham.
Oh, we'd love to see it. I think the Gotham Revolution really is here. Even Carly Lloyd played well the other night. But yeah, Midge Purse, Sabrina Flores, Jen Cujo is just absolutely killing it at the moment. So good. I mean, she was amazing last year and obviously has that story coming in from the cold and becoming a professional NWSL player. But she just seems to get better with every game and was fantastic in the fall series. And before you call me out for being too shady on a, you know, US women's national team's legend, the reason I'm a little bit shady is because Ife Onamanu is been playing really well. And I think especially in the fall series last year, has come on a lot as a link-up player. Their kind of radar, where they know the other runners are going to be, especially with Midge Purse and Paige Monahan, that are these wingers that really like to kind of bomb the box or pick up the ball and do these runs. And Onamanu is a gift for drawing players in, and then her teammates know how to take the space that the players who are attracted to Onamanu's hold-up play, they can expose that. And so I think it's a shame to see someone as who's coming into their own, like Onamanu, be on the bench for someone like Carly Lloyd, where it's like, okay, we know what you're going to get. Lloyd scored a great goal the other night. She actually played all right. She was in that kind of false nine, dropping into a 10 role that Onamanu likes to occupy sometimes too. But yeah, just, you know, they're airing your frustrations as you go along. Anything else, Flo?
Don't think so.
Well, look, we are relatively football. You are waking up, going to bed, going on a walk, or being yourself, and we love that. And give us a rating, give us a review. Tell your friends to check us out and be well, be healthy, try and be nice to people. Flo, are you going to go off to bed?
Yeah, I think I will, yeah.
All right, see you later.